Welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's greatest directors and their essential films. This week on the show we are once again looking at Alfred Hitchcock, this time his 1963 classic, The Birds. Returning on the show today to talk about The Birds, Professor Murray Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So watching this film again, it sort of shocked me a little bit about how violent this movie is. Now, once again, today compared to a lot of violent stuff today, yeah, probably pretty tame, maybe even PG-13. But for the 60s, early 60s, it's pretty gory. And the thing that shocked me the most when I saw it the first time, and especially this time again, is the scene when Jessica Tandy's going to the farmer's house, mm-hmm. catch up on him, and then she goes into his room and she finds all these dead bird bodies, and then you get the zoom on his eyes, and his eyes have been gouged out, and there's blood all over his face.
Horrifying
scene. That is horrifying, and I'm like, they got away with that in 1963? I imagine audiences would have fainted at something like that.
You know, it's shocking now. You know, mm-hmm. every time I see it, now I know it's coming, so you know to cringe, but it is really a very, very bloody and gory scene, especially since none of the other attacks by the birds are that intense.
Yeah, that graphic. You don't see any body parts being lost because of the birds, but now you're seeing this guy lose his eyes and be gouged to death. I mean, wow.
Yeah, there's a theme of blindness that goes through the movie, though. With the birds pecking out the eyes and the blind man's bluff at the birthday party and the broken glasses.
And I was wondering, how did this go over with the censors? Now, this was the early 60s. By this time, the Hays Code was nearing its end. And I believe 4 or 5 years from now, it was abolished altogether for the rating system we use today. But still, there was a Hays Code in there. And I was he must have, with especially this much violence, he must have had a heck of a time trying to get this thing through.
But he'd already sort of blown up the Hays Code in the 60s with Psycho by showing a toilet.
Toilet. That is more shocking
that
than
is more
all
shocking.
The gore and violence.
I think since this was billed as a horror movie, I think you have a little bit more creative license to be graphic.
So no problems with censors that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware
of. I didn't know either. And, you know, once again, I know, so by the time this airs, this will be past Halloween time in November. But we've been going on a horror tear on my show for a little while. And watching this, I think this is as influential on horror films as Psycho. And I think why? Because it sets up the horror in the small town genre. And that's been done in countless numbers, like Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, even like a comedy movie that came out like 12 years ago called Slither, where like, you know, it's like alien worm creatures. It's always something comes to a small town, whether it's this, you know, killer like Michael Myers, whether it's some creepy alien invasion force that does something to people, or it's some sort of monster, or it's just birds attacking, or there's this really bad one from the 70s where it's earthworms coming up and eating people that was made fun of on Mystery Science Theater. And it's been done countless number of times, and I'm pretty sure it's this one. It's this quiet, peaceful little small town. Everybody seems to get along with each other for the most part. It's usually peaceful. It almost like the serene Norman Rockwell-ish town. And then boom, this bird invasion comes down, and it just turns everything upside down.
You know, it's an interesting story because it is this little, you know, ordinary life, and into this ordinary life, some sort of creepy thing happens, which is Hitchcock's favorite thing. But the book that it's based on, the only thing they share is the little town. None of the characters are in the Daphne du Maurier book. And the what I think Hitchcock plays with, but we don't really explore fully, is why the birds do what they do, and how much does it have to do with Melanie Daniels? Because when we first see her, she's dressed all in black like a crow. Mm-hmm. And she goes to a bird shop. And she wears this fur coat, which is like the opposite of birds. It's like, you know, predator. So it's even implied by some of the people in the town that she brought the evil mm-hmm. with her.
Yeah, it's the scene in the restaurant when the one woman's like, they didn't do anything until you came. You know, you're evil.
Evil.
Yeah.
Yes. smack. Yeah. I mean, she gets smack. But what do you think of that? What do you make of Melanie Griffith's role in the Birds doing what they do?
I do find that's what I don't think she really brought anything to it. I mean, I don't know, but I think it's just what's creepy about the Birds is, like you said, you have no idea why. There's no explanation. They just did it one day, and it might be this thing where even the ornithologist woman kind of says, like, well, if it happens, it'll be done in a few days. So I'm thinking, like, it's going to be done in a few days, and then the Birds are going to go back to normal, and we're just going to be like, how did that happen in the first place? What caused them to go? And I think that's what's terrifying. There's no explanation. Like, I'm once again imagining this movie now. They would have been like, it's because this government was doing secrets and nuclear weapons, and that changed the minds of the birds. Or
yes, some they did sort some of, sort of avian, you know, testing on animals or something. And
yeah, and there is a movie which I'm going to talk about later that is very Birds influenced that it does something like that. But we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But I think just leaving it up to your imagination, not giving any explanation, is what's so terrifying about the Birds.
And because it seems senseless, but it's not completely senseless, because there is that question that maybe she's responsible. And is that just because she's a pretty young blonde and she's sort of threatening Jessica Tandy's world? Or is it just, you know, she's just a woman, so she's the embodiment of evil because she's the outsider? Or has that got nothing to do with it at all?
I don't really see anything to do with it at all. Maybe that's just me. I didn't really see her... Because she's not a bad person. I mean, I do think it's a bit silly that she goes all the way to the small town to give the guy the birds just to kind of get a little jab back at him, even though she's clearly interested in him. Like, but I don't really see anything she's doing as immoral or bad or anything, even if maybe Jessica Tandy sees that a little bit.
I do love the scene where she is driving and she's got the birds in the cage, and they're you know,
swerving
left and right with her mm-hmm. driving. That was a great shot. And at the end, when the little girl wants to bring the birds with them, the ones that mm-hmm. were the gift, and I don't know, would you take them with you, or
I wouldn't.
Are they all evil or what?
Yeah, like, you don't know if they're going to let them out of their cage, they're going to be trying to bite you.
Right.
And you know, with a film like this, when it is birds attacking, it could very easily creep into, like, you know, some really bad 50s B movies with, you know, something attacks them, or then the special effects look really cheesy, you know, like there's this one really silly movie called Zat where it's this like lizard monster, and there's this famous scene when he's creeping through a pharmacy and it's clearly a guy in a suit and it just looks so awkward and goofy. It could easily be this, but for 1963, it's got some pretty good effects. I was looking, they used for like the screeching of the birds, they showed like it's like a keyboard kind of, it's like an electronic instrument. It's like a keyboard, maybe a early synth kind of thing.
Oh, like theremin.
They're in a theremin. I used part of that too, and they use that with the screeching of the sounds. And even like the dummy birds they use, especially the scene when Tippi Hedren goes into the room upstairs and they're just all dive bombing her, it looks pretty realistic. You don't look at it and go, okay, they're just throwing like rubber birds at her or something. It looks realistic.
Well, you know, Rod Taylor said that they gave the birds a mixture of wheat and whiskey just so that they would, you know, kind of walk around. You know, otherwise they would be too active.
Whiskey for birds? I don't know. Is that healthy for them?
Probably not. They might have had different laws then about what you could do with animals in movies. Because they had a lot of real birds, fake birds, mechanical birds, all kinds of birds.
And I do remember even one of the scenes, which I wonder if it was real, it's the scene at the very end when they're getting out of the house and Rod Taylor gets out first and he's slowly walking. He's got his hand out there. One of the birds takes a bite at it. Did that bird actually bite his hand, or was that just like a mechanical?
I'm not sure.
Because I thought, like, man, that if like, that's pretty impressive training if they're able to get the bird to bite his hand. But I think now we could just get into the cast in this movie. So we got Jessica Tandy, which I find kind of interesting because she was obviously married to Hume Cronin.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of work not only as an actor with Hitchcock early in the 40s, but he also wrote a couple screenplays with him, like even Rope. And, you know, it's interesting, her, and she's kind of the typical, that Hitchcock mom we see mm-hmm. so often, like Norma Bates, or the mom in, you know, North by Northwest, or Notorious. She's sort of domineering over her son. She, you know, she sees this woman, it's almost like she sees her as a threat to her, like to her existence. Like, you know, he's my son. You're not taking him away from me.
Right. Because I lost my husband and this is all I have. So mm-hmm. I'm circling the wagons. Yeah. She's that Hitchcock mother that he likes to portray as being sort of cold and indifferent and not warm. Melanie Daniels compared to her is very warm.
Yeah. And even the school teacher, she even said that she doesn't really have much emotion for her son. And she says that, you know, when somebody else loves her son, it's like she's giving, you know, she's jealous because they're giving her what she can't give to her son.
Right. And that's mm-hmm. Suzanne Pleshette, who also comes to a really violent end.
Very violent.
Which is surprising, too, because we don't know anything about the farmer. But Suzanne Pleshette's character seemed completely mm-hmm. nice. So you can't imagine why the birds would have it in for her, unless it's random. Which, as you say, that's what makes it terrifying.
Yeah, another thing that's just terrifying in the movie is that it doesn't hold back anything as far as who the birds attack when it shows you. I mean, the thing is, it attacks children.
Yes.
Like, we see it not only at the birthday party, but the famous scene when they're running from the schoolyard, birds are attacking the children. And once again, I'm not sure today, you know, just how, you know, sensitive we are to everything now. If, you know, somebody would say, I don't think it's right having kids being attacked and even killed by these birds. I think there would be protests or something today.
Do we do that in movies now? Do we?
I mean, you don't see it on screen when kids get attacked and killed. If it does happen, it's usually off screen and we never hear about it.
Yeah, usually they save it for the adults who, quote unquote, mm-hmm. deserve it.
Yeah, then you got Tippi Hedren, and this was her first film with Hitchcock, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and she was very excited to get the job. Little did she know.
Yeah, and I think it's almost impossible to talk about Tippi Hedren and Alfred Hitchcock and just not talk about a little bit about just sort of the relationship they had. I know the scene, I know she went through a lot of psychological torture through this movie. I believe the scene that when she goes upstairs and the birds are attacking her, I think it was, I forget, Hitchcock did something in that scene.
He told her that they were going to do it in a day.
And it went longer.
And it was going to all be mechanical birds. Instead, it was 5 days of guys wearing big, heavy gloves, throwing things at her. Live birds, mechanical birds, fake birds. But they were all on strings so that, you know, they could pull them back. But, you know, they pecked at her face. They almost took out her eye. Mm. And she had a nervous breakdown. She was actually hospitalized. And she said she just had nightmares of flapping wings and, you know, it's just extremely traumatic because, you know, you do the scene, and then she'd go take a shower and then come back and then do the scene all day for 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah, terrifying. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of, they put a lot of work into making all of those birds, but I think they wanted a lot of real ones because they were afraid that they wouldn't look completely natural.
Yeah.
If you don't let birds do what they do. Now, the birds they were throwing at Tippi Hedren had, you know, they're beaks were rubber banded shut, but they're still really hard.
Really sharp, I can imagine.
Yeah, you could still peck somebody's eye out without, you know, the birds don't, they're not reading the contract. But before the release of the film, Tippi Hedren was featured on the cover of Look magazine with the caption, Hitchcock's new Grace Kelly. Mm-hmm. But that didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, because I know she did this movie and then Marnie, and was that it with Hitchcock?
That was it, and he basically ruined her career. Yeah, it's kind of like the Harvey Weinstein thing.
Yeah.
You know, he pretty much chased her, and she rebuffed him, and then he made sure she never worked in that town again. He also did some other weird things. He gave her daughter a doll that looked just like her mother, and he gave it to her in a box that looked like a coffin. So poor Melanie Griffith, her daughter, was just completely freaked out by this.
And so her daughter's Melanie Griffith, and then her daughter's
Dakota.
50 Shades of Grey. Yeah, Dakota Johnson.
Yeah. Then who I can sort of see in a Hitchcock movie.
Dakota Johnson?
I can't see Melanie Griffith.
I can.
You can?
Because she was in Body Double, which is basically Rear Window.
True. That's true. She's got a hard edge to her. She doesn't have that.
Always the Hitchcock blends are always can be a little bit icy and cold. I think she could have done that.
Yeah, I'm not buying her as a Hitchcock blonde, but I can see Dakota Johnson doing several roles. She has that ingenue look.
Yeah, the only thing I can know her from is those 50 Shades of Grey movies, which isn't a very good.
That's not a good resume.
His resume. So then you got her. And then one thing I noticed was this is one of the first appearances from Veronica Cartwright.
Yes.
And she's sort of like the horror queen because she was in this. She was in Alien. And then she was also in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And remember the classic scene at the end of that movie? It's the 78 one, not the 56 one. You know, when they're trying to, you know, not be taken over by the aliens. And she sees Donald Sutherland, she sees Donald Sutherland, and she thinks he's still, you know, still human. And she meets him in the park, and then he just looks at her and goes, and then she's like losing it. That's such a great scene.
You know, she talked a lot about working with Hitchcock, how he treated everybody like an adult. Hmm. So, you know, they would be having conversations and he would be telling her about wine.
Then you got Rod Taylor, and you know, it's interesting, his character, it's almost like he's surrounded by women, and like the women like have to find him in a way. Like, you know, the Suzanne Plichette, she stayed there because she's still not 100% over him rejecting her. Then you got Tippi Hedren, who goes all the way to, you know, for all the way just to give him those birds. And then you got, you know, his mother, who's sort of domineering and, you know, and sort of is very picky about who he sees. And she probably doesn't want him to see anybody but her. And he's got a daughter, adoring sister. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He is surrounded by women who are protecting him. You're right. He was not Hitchcock's first choice. Hitchcock wanted Farley Granger.
That's interesting. And I know, at this time, I know Farley Granger, because I was reading about him, and obviously he was big, you know, with Rope and Strangers on a Train. He did a lot of good film noirs. But I believe, like, once the late 50s hit, I think he went to theater, right?
Yeah.
And then he tried to come back into film, and it never worked out for
him. Yeah, it never worked out. I can't see him in this role. Although I don't know that I think Rod Taylor is perfect for it. He's trying so hard to be Cary Grant.
Yeah, and I think with Farley Granger, he's always kind of a weak guy, I would say.
Yes.
You know, doesn't have a strong will. I mean, Rope, obviously. I mean, even in Strangers on a Train, all these things are happening to him, and he feels really powerless to do anything about it.
Yes, and the Bruno character completely overpowers him, mm-hmm. just in terms of the movie. He's much more riveting than Farley Granger's character. You know, if we could talk about the opening for a minute, those two Sealyham Terriers that Hitchcock is yeah. walking into the bird or out of the bird shop, those are his dogs.
Oh, really?
And there's actually, I always tell my students to look for this, because there's a moment where you switch from location to the studio. So you're on the street and you hear someone wolf whistle at Melanie Daniels, and she turns around and she smiles. And then there's a moment where you pass by a wall, mm-hmm. and you know that's the cut. You know, that's the spot on the street where they cut. And then as soon as you, you know, come back to the story, now you know it's a studio. And then they go into the bird mm-hmm. shop. So all of that's really studio work. It's a nice cut. It's easy to find, though. It's easy to identify.
And let's see what else we can talk about. Oh, I do want to talk a little bit. We talked earlier about this was based on a short story by Daphne du Maurier, and this is the third film he's done a film based on her novels, because she also did Rebecca and Jamaica Inn, which is considered one of Hitchcock's worst films.
Yes,
but
and rightly so.
It's pretty bad, huh?
That's pretty bad.
Was she kind of like an Agatha Christie? Did she do like a lot of mystery novels?
Yes, she did. She was kind of like Agatha Christie, but with more of a gothic, less old of a houses. Whodunit. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, more of a classic English literature kind of a. approach to things.
Mm-hmm. And so have you read the short story, and it's not very good?
I did read this one. I also read Jamaica Inn and Rebecca. I have all those books in my office. She's a great writer. The movies don't really have a whole lot of resemblance to the story. Hitchcock just sort of, especially with the birds, just took the idea of it and ran with it, because none of the characters are the same. Mm-hmm. The only thing he took from the story was the setting.
Yeah, and even with Hitchcock, with this story, I was doing some research on it. It's been done a lot of times, even before this movie came out. It was done in a lot of radio adaptations, and even later on, I think there was a miniseries, something like that, earlier on. And I know recently there is a TV series coming out next year based on this story, which I just find baffling, because the birds is the birds. Everybody knows it. How are you going to do another thing, which people are just going to watch it like, wait, this is the birds?
Maybe they're going to come up with an answer of why the birds act this way, and whether they can be controlled. Because one of the chilling points in the movie is the ornithologist who says, oh, but that's ridiculous, because if birds decided to collude, there's no way we could fight back.
So I'll put this to you. If they basically do a TV series, which probably is going to be very similar to this movie, I'm going to say, I would cast, who would you have in each of the films?
Oh, that's a really good roles. That's a really good question. All right, you must have thought about this, so you go first.
Okay. I think I'm going to have, maybe I'm just a Game of Thrones fan, I really like Daenerys, I'm going to put Emilia Clarke.
Yes!
I think she can do the blonde thing because she's doing it, you know, she's Daenerys, but she's always kind of, she looks a little bit like Kim Novak to me. I would have her as the Tippi Hedren character, Rod Taylor guy, maybe would have Chris Pratt. I think he might be able to pull that off.
Suzanne Plachette would be who?
I was trying to think about that one. Somebody.
I'll give you Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett, I was probably going to say that too.
And I think for the Mitch character, the Rod Taylor character, maybe Chris Pine.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know what, I'm going to change that actually because I'm not a huge, Chris Pratt's okay, but I like Chris Pine a lot more, so.
Yeah, and he's got the eyes.
Actually, for the Plachette character, I was going to go with, speaking of Chris Pine, Gal Gadot. I think she kind of has that look, and she even has that, her voice sounds a bit similar to Plachette. I think her would be good.
Or Rose McGowan.
Yeah, and then for the Veronica Cartwright character, I would probably choose.
A young Chloe Sevigny.
Maybe. I would go with Millie Bobby Brown. She's 11 in Stranger Things.
Oh, okay.
So, because they kind of look alike to me, so I would go with that.
Those are all good choices. What about Jessica Tandy?
Maybe like Julianne Moore.
Yes, she could do it.
She seems to me like she would be a good in a Hitchcock kind of movie.
I think Hitchcock tried to make her look like she could be an older version of Melanie Daniels. You know, if you look at the hair.
Yeah.
So if we were going to... If we're going to use Scarlett Johansson or who did you pick for Melanie Daniels?
Emilia Clarke.
Okay, yes, who I think would be perfect. Is there another actress? I mean, do we have to go with Cersei?
Lena Headey? So she would be...
You know, she would actually be a really good Jessica Tandy.
Yeah.
I mean, take no prisoners. Oh, but God. She'd run everybody out on a rail.
She would, like,
Melanie Daniels wouldn't have a chance.
It would be she would just blow up the whole house.
She'd make the birds leave, too. Mm-hmm.
Of course, I wouldn't be too comfortable with that since she's Cersei. We're like, oh, no, what's that relationship with her son?
Oh, that's true. That could add another layer of weirdness in there.
Yeah. And
although, if it's Chris Pine, really, can you blame her? That's a good-looking man.
Yeah. And so what else can we talk? Oh, I want to talk a little bit about – this is interesting. This is Bernard Herrmann worked on the film only as a sound, because there's no music in the film. Like, no score. Did you feel that it would have benefited or taken away from the film or not added anything if
Herrmann did a score? You know, I think it adds to the spookiness.
I think so,
that all the sounds sound unnatural. You know, I think to add real music, like, Bernard Herrmann would have done something amazing, I'm sure. At this point, though, he and Hitchcock have pretty much fallen out. Mm-hmm. But I think that the fact that the music is so strange and it doesn't have an ending in the conventional sense are what make the movie kind of unique.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, the sound, I mean, that screeching of the birds is chilling, it's creepy. And I think if you did like some dramatic string tension music like you see in Psycho, or I think it would have been too on the nose. I think just leaving it out was better.
When audiences left the film's UK premiere at the Odeon, they were greeted by the sound of screeching and flapping birds from loudspeakers hidden in the trees to scare them further. Can you imagine leaving that movie and hearing that?
Yeah. And so looking at this, was this Hitchcock? This is probably, say, Hitchcock's last great classic film of the Hitchcock level, because I know he did Marnie, which I haven't seen, but that's not considered that great. He did Torn Curtain, which I probably would put as one of his worst.
Terrible.
And it's, yeah, it's,
except as, it does have Paul Newman in it.
It does have that, and I think there's one really good scene in it when he's at the farmhouse and the guy's tailing him and they have to kill him. That scene's great. Everything else in the film's pretty bad, but that scene's good. And I know you do like Frenzy.
I do like Frenzy.
And you know, his last film was Family Plot, and that's pretty awful.
It's like bad 1970s TV sitcom. I can't believe he had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Frenzy, though, it does kind of get away with what I like about Hitchcock. He goes for, there's a nude scene, which, you know, he doesn't do.
Yeah, that feels dirty.
It feels dirty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do feel like he lost his way, but I think Marnie has some moments of brilliance.
You know, it's funny to talk about family plot. I know Bruce Dern was in that movie, right? And I guess for a while, this is around the same time when Spielberg got big with Jaws, and Spielberg had tried numerous attempts to, you know, find some way to meet Hitchcock, and then Hitchcock, for some reason, always turned him down. Then Dern, I guess, reading Dern talked to him, like, you know, man, why are you, you know, talk to the guy. He's a huge fan of yours. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you. And he goes, I can't talk to him. I'd feel like such a whore. And he goes, why? He goes, because he did that movie with the fish, right? And he goes, yeah. It's like, well, he doesn't know that I did the voice of the fish for one of the ride at Universal Studios for the shark. And I guess he felt so dirty doing that, he just couldn't talk to him. Okay, and I got to talk about this one movie that's huge influence on this. Actually, Tippi Hedren makes an appearance in this movie. Not really, but like a character is watching a TV and they're like, it's some Tippi Hedren. It's not The Birds, but it's some other movie she did. It's called Birdemic. It came out like 8-9 years ago. It's... You got to see it one time because it's so, so bad, but it's hilarious. And it's San Francisco, birds attack, but the special effects are, I could probably do something better than that. It's like 90s, like, you know, the GIFs on the internet, of like, you know, the very famous GIF of like the dancing baby?
Yes.
It looks that bad. And like they don't move or anything. They just kind of flap their wings like this. And there's scenes when they're flapping their wings and then people are like, oh, no. It's so awkward. It looks like a student film, but probably students can do it better. And the acting is absolutely terrible. This one guy can't act, you know, his way out of a paper bag.
Is it meant to be campy?
No, it's not. This guy, because the whole movie has this global warming message. He explains that the birds attack us and kill us because they're upset of how we treat the environment or something.
Okay.
And there's so, and like the environmental message is so ham-fisted. Like he has this girlfriend and they go to a movie and then he goes, wow, that was a great movie, An Inconvenient Truth.
Oh, yeah, plug.
Yeah, there's one guy they team up with, they're like a group of survivors, and he goes, I got so tired of all the killing in Iraq. Why can't we give peace a chance? The lines are so bad. I'll have to show you a clip on YouTube. You would laugh, but there's even one scene when it's, they're like trying to scrounge food together, and he goes, what did you get? And she goes, I got some seaweed. And he goes, great!
I thought you were going to say, I hope you didn't find it with one of those plastic things that go around the six packs because animals get caught in those things.
You got to see it. Like I say, it's sort of like if Al Gore directed The Birds, but he had like absolutely...
Like $5 to do
it. Yeah, for like $5, and he blocked everything out of his brain on how to make a film. I'll show you a clip on YouTube when we're done, but it's definitely a watch. All right, so getting into close to the end of my questions, is there anything else I haven't talked about that you want to bring up?
You know, I did want to mention that bird watching and identifying species were part of Hitchcock's upbringing as part of, you know, becoming a country gentleman. And he has lots of other bird references in his movies. So in Blackmail, there's a bird chirping away after the morning after the murder. In Sabotage, birds are a motif linking the terrorists. In Young and Innocent, there's a flock of gulls indicating a corpse is washed ashore. The Lady Vanishes has crying birds. Jamaica Inn, crying birds. In Vertigo, the name Elster means mockingbird in German. And Judy Barton, she wears a bird pin. And then, of course, in Psycho, there are multiple controlling bird images. So I think Hitchcock kind of culminated all that bird fear and anxiety in this one movie. And I think he might have had more to say movie-wise, but I think the thing with Tippi Hedren, just, I think he was done after that. You know, you asked if this was his last great one. I do think there were moments of greatness in Marnie and then in Frenzy, but I think after the debacle with Tippi Hedren, I think he was kind of through.
Okay, then. And then last question I'll have is, tell us a little bit about the classes you have coming up. Probably I would say the spring, because we're already pretty close to the end of the semester here.
Well, every semester I do American cinema and world cinema. And I do intro to film, which, you know, I've been surprised how many opportunities there are to bring up scenes from Hitchcock movies. I could probably do that whole class with just examples from Hitchcock. But when I've taught this class in the, you know, face-to-face in the semester, this semester I'm doing it online. At the end of the class, I always tell them as they're leaving, as you go home, don't forget to stop and get a rotisserie chicken.
Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Alfred Hitchcock and his 1963 classic, The Birds. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Pastor West Dave, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, don't they ever stop migrating?